Welcome to the Tracy Sandler Show, brought to you by Fevo. I am your host, Tracy Sandler, and I'm not going to lie to you guys. I'm so excited to have Kevin Clark, who hosts the This Is Football podcast for Omaha Productions. I'm so excited. I had trouble getting that out. And he appears on ESPN, but Kevin is one of my most favorite people in sports media. Hopefully the rest of you aren't watching today and getting offended. So much fun, so knowledgeable, and I'm just so excited to have you on the show. Welcome.
So I noticed that I always prefaced every guest that I had on my show with, this is one of my favorite people in media. And I was like, am I saying that too much? And then I was like, well, wait, I book the guests. And so it would be a bad thing if I ever booked someone that wasn't my favorite person, one of my favorite people in media. And so like, it should be totally fine to be able to say that before I introduce a guest. Because you wouldn't book someone you hate, hopefully.
Hopefully, unless I just was like, this is going to be fun. Like, I'm taking this for, which is just so on brand for me.
Who would that be for you? Like, is there an athlete, like, growing up where you're just like, I hate this person, but I would love to have them on a podcast, just yell at them?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know why I whispered about it, that it's such a good question. I had to whisper about it. Really good question. Who would that athlete be? I grew up a Lakers fan. I grew up a 49ers fan, though I wouldn't call myself a fan anymore. I don't hate them. It's just different now because I cover the team. I'm a diehard Dodger. Oh, I know. I went to Michigan. So yeah, Urban Meyer. I don't even know why. I can't believe it took me that long.
Be a very interesting pie.
Athlete, but Urban Meyer.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know what his palate is for podcasts, but yeah, that'd be quite a pod.
It would be spectacular. I would make him talk about how great Jim Harbaugh is for like a solid 15 minutes, just nonstop, which is basically what he had to do on Fox this year. So I guess there's that. Who would yours be? As long as
so, I would probably. I don't hate him. I've exercised a lot of my feelings about this, but Shaq left Orlando when I was 8 or 9 years old. Worst thing sports wise that had ever happened to that town, probably still, when you consider the expectations that that's set for a bunch of other franchise guys later. I would love to interrogate that for a while and just figure out why he left Orlando, help me feel better. I actually had, so, you know, I'm a Miami fan as well, Miami Hurricanes, and I had Herbie on the pod maybe 3 years ago, and I had him just play therapist on the 2003 Fiesta Bowl with Ohio State, and that was actually incredibly freeing for me. He was basically just like, admit that if you're not over it now, you're never going to be over it. And I was like, that's a very freeing thing that I'm just never, I will die mad.
That's totally fair. Yeah. I think that's fair. I will die mad at Urban Meyer.
Yeah, there you go.
Just for existing. Frankly, just for being around. I can't get mad at any of the last few years. I mean, I wouldn't want Ryan Day on because, like, what am I going to kick a guy when he's down? Maybe. I mean, I'm not opposed to it, but
I mean, they're going to be pretty good this year. So just put a pin in that for next year and maybe you can book them next summer.
Maybe, maybe. But, you know, you say that as if you don't think Michigan's going to win a fourth straight over Ohio State. Yeah.
I know. I have no response to that. I don't want to be the person you hate now.
That well, but that would, I guess, start a new set of podcasts for me.
Yep. Yep.
I would redo the intro after you leave and be like, he was one of my favorites. And then it all changed. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. But you are one of my favorites, and I've gotten to see you quite a bit over this quote-unquote NFL offseason that is a misnomer that doesn't exist to me because I don't know what that means. Because we were at the Combine 2 weeks after the Super Bowl. The owners' meetings, getting ready for the draft. Will you be at the draft in Detroit, or will you?
No, I'll be in Bristol, Connecticut that night, doing stuff for ESPN. And I actually can't. I don't know if I can say the cast, but a couple folks and I are going to have a really good time reacting to every pick and putting it up on all the digital properties and all that stuff. It'll be really fun.
Oh, that sounds really fun. I will. Yep. Well, I was going to say I would tune into that and I will do my best, but I will be in the media workroom in Santa Clara.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. You got to lock in on when they take a tackle at 31. You got to lock in on that.
That's true. Or if they trade up at 21, maybe. Trade up 221. I didn't say that. Would they trade up to 221? I'm not breaking news here. I just feel
like... Is that
like
the buzz?
There was a mock draft by Matt Barros that said that. And the more I've thought about it, I think the reality of this draft for them is their needs are so minimal that don't play around with what you need. And so if there is a tackle that they really love, that they hope is there at 31, but no will be there in the 20s, I would think they would trade up. Now, I'm not in charge, though last year's draft of two Michigan players would make you think I might be slightly in charge, but I'm not actually in charge. So I don't know, but I just feel like this is not a draft to mess around with. It's like one of those things. They don't need much, but what they need, they need. So get your guy.
It's a good thought.
There's my thought. Where do you think, we have other things we're going to get to, but what would you think they should do with that pick? Let's pretend they stay at 31. I assume you think offensive lineman, but maybe you don't.
No, I mean, I saw, honestly, I was looking this morning because I haven't thought a ton about what the 49ers need to do, because it's like the Chiefs where it's like the questions are not what rookie can make them better. That is not that. I'm thinking about the Bears changing their franchise over, and I'm thinking about how the Panthers even figure anything out over the next 2 years. That's what this year is for. For the Niners, I probably looked at 10 mock drafts this morning. 9 of them had offensive tackle, in many cases, a different one. And then I saw one that had a cornerback, which is, I'm always up for drafting cornerbacks. I'm always up for drafting. For me, it's funny because I didn't look on John Lynch, but a couple of the analytics guys were putting out kind of draft profiles of different GMs and where they spend their capital. And Howie Roseman, who I think is probably the best GM in football over the past decade, even though he got demoted at one point in that decade, he only goes trenches, and then after the trenches, big gap, cornerback. I always feel like no matter what, you can't go wrong. And obviously the Niners do not need to go first round defensive lineman. But what I am saying is that I would just keep going from those three buckets, defensive back, offensive line, and defensive line, until there's some glaring need otherwise, unless you desperately need a quarterback, unless you desperately need a linebacker, unless you desperately need a skill guy. They can create, I think that stuff can be created. It can certainly be created with Kyle Shanahan. And so for me, you get the biggest guys possible on the line and you figure everything else out later.
Well, the three positions that you go with are the three positions with which they need to use their draft picks. So that works out really well for them. They do need to figure out corner at some point in the draft. They brought in a guy in free agency in Isaac Yiodom. And I keep saying his name every single podcast. And every single podcast after I say his name, I say, I hope I'm saying that correctly. So one of these days, we haven't actually met with him yet. So one day I'm going to get that name right. When I do his 5 fun facts with him, I'm going to be like, fact one, please tell us how to say your name. But they're really excited about him. But there are other things into a corner, but offensive tackle for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is planning for the inevitable one day departure of Trent Williams, but then also upgrading the right side of the line. And defensive line is obviously where they make their money, so to speak. That's their bread and butter. That's how they build their team. So I think we'll see a lot of that in the draft. But I've talked a lot of 49ers. I don't want to shock anybody on this podcast and 49ers draft. So I want to talk a little bit more general draft with you, because this is obviously something you've been paying a lot of attention to. You mentioned the Bears. You mentioned Caleb Williams. I would love to know your favorite quarterback in this draft that's not Caleb Williams and why. And if you stay J.J. McCarthy, I'll send you a present.
Well, I'm really between saying Ohio State's going to win the game next year and not naming J.J. McCarthy here. I feel like I'm really on your crap list here. It's Jaden Daniels. And there's a couple of things. So I don't know how deep you dive into the analytics, but I think it's a good tool in the toolbox. And there's a stat called sacks to pressure ratio, I think, where it's really sticky and it's really predictive. Okay. And Jaden Daniels is really bad at it. He takes a lot of sacks for how much he's pressured. Okay. That's the one red flag outside of size, which I think is the size thing doesn't bother me very much. But some of his stats on how often he takes a sack is worrying. That's, you know, that's at some point you become Zach Wilson, right? Everything else points to Jaden Daniels being a special prospect. I think Caleb Williams is number one, but Jaden Daniels was torching. If you look at the number of 20-yard-plus plays, 40-yard-plus plays against SEC defenses, Jaden Daniels was historic. I think that Joe Burrow is the only guy who was even close. And I think that that's, I mean, like, if you just look at that, like, really, it was Burrow and Daniels. I'm not talking about LSU. I'm talking about, like, SEC. I'm talking national as far as explosive plays over the past decade. And if you can do that reliably against SEC defenses, which, as kind of the power two breaks away from everybody else, is becoming more and more NFL by the day, that's something, that's a skill. That's not Zach Wilson playing behind a huge offensive line against a bunch of G5 teams during COVID. Like, that's not that. Mm-hmm. It is a guy who can make all the throws, who can hang in there, who's had year. I mean, this is the other thing. Jake Daniels started at Arizona State. The growth that he had has been phenomenal. And that's what you want to see. You don't necessarily want to see a guy who came in freshman year, lit it up, and then nothing happened for the 2 years after. There's been a trajectory there. And so I think that that's, I'd go with Jaden Daniels second overall. I would not, I think there's a huge, I mean, I think Drake May is really good. I think you take Drake May third. I would not go with JJ McCarthy fourth. I would not go, and I'm starting to see this now, Bo Nix, the middle of the first round. There's now talk that Michael Penix is coming up into being a first round pick, which maybe hasn't always been the case, but he's shooting up boards. And what's funny is, and I had Trevor Sikkim on my show today, we were talking about how hard it is for boards to change this time of year within scouts. Like, the scouting community doesn't really change much. But what does happen is coaches fall in love with guys around this time of year. And I remember reading an Ian Rappaport piece a couple of years ago where it was the middle of the season and they didn't like the quarterback class. And they said, well, some of these quarterbacks aren't very good, but they'll shoot up once coaches fall in love with them. And it's like, then don't let the coaches in the draft room. Like, that's a terrible way to run a team. But that's just what happens. And so guys want to save their jobs. They want to reset the clock in some cases. I think the biggest thing for me is, and I had Thomas Dimitroff on my show during the Super Bowl, and I said, why is Jordan Love the exception, not the rule? Why is it that he got to stick for 3 years, they drafted and developed, they actually did best player available? And he said, in a lot of cases, there's no patience because the incentives are not there for regimes. And instead, what stinks from my perspective is if Bo Nix gets overdrafted somewhere, he's going to go somewhere he has to play day one. If Michael Penix gets, I would love to see Michael Penix get drafted by a team that doesn't need a guy for three more years. A guy where they say, okay, you're just going to sit here and you're going to learn and it's going to be fine. And I think that that's, you know, a team like the Jets where it's like, you know, you're going to learn behind Aaron Rodgers. You're actually going to be good. Unlike Zach Wilson, you're going to throw the ball forward if he gets hurt again, but you're going to get 2 years on the bench. I just wish there was more of that. But anyway, the point being is Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and Caleb Williams are the franchise changers. Everybody else is a big question mark, in my opinion.
I agree with you. And going back to what you said, I wish there was more of that patience as well. Same with regimes, because I think bad teams stay bad by changing their coaches every year. So I think there needs to generally be patience. And it's funny with JJ McCarthy, all joking aside, I want him to go to Minnesota, and I want him to go to Minnesota because he does need to start right away. I don't want him to go to the Commanders and have to start on day one. Obviously, what I want doesn't necessarily matter, but
the pressure to save the franchise and everyone's going to be different. Like, you don't want that right now. You do not want that.
It ruins guys. I mean, I think it can ruin careers. And I agree with you on Michael Penix. I just think there should be more of that, and it would be better for that. And it's funny, when the 49ers drafted Trey Lance at 3, which of course turned out to be a disaster. Mm-hmm. But one of the benefits that should have been there in theory was that he didn't have to start right away, and he got to learn for a year behind, but he's not that guy. And that was a mess for a lot of reasons, but generally I think that does work. And I agree with you. I think that should be better. So as long as we're talking about Jaden Daniels going at 2, so he goes to the Commanders. The Commanders are kind of interesting franchise, because I feel like in the past he would have had to save the Commanders, but now they've done a lot of good things this offseason, but they're rebuilding a team. They're rebuilding it with a new GM who was part of the Lynn Shanahan era. I've talked a lot on this podcast about how different this draft is going to be for them without Adam Peters. So he's rebuilding a team. So Jaden Daniels potentially goes into a situation where he would start day one, probably, but he doesn't need to save the franchise this season. So does that give him kind of a learning curve, not learning behind someone, but then does he have a learning curve in the NFL and some patience with him?
So
was that the answer? Is, that was confusing.
No. I mean, the answer is, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't.
Why are you here? Just kidding.
Yeah. I don't. The Commanders are in uncharted territory. And Adam Peters, they want him to be, from what I understand, they want Adam Peters to be a strong GM. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons they hired Dan Quinn and not Bill Belichick. And I, by the way, this is an aside, but I would have called Bill Belichick and said, hey, do you want to coach this team? You're the best coach of all time, not the best GM of all time. Why don't we give you 53 guys and you maximize them? And people were like, well, Bill Belichick could say he wants to do that and then not do it. And so, well, then fire him.
Right.
Because his other option is he's wearing the Washington Huskies sweatshirt, walking around practice, and then talking to Matt Rhule the next day at Nebraska so practice. Okay. So, like, that's the other option. You need to call him.
And that's the one that's where they went.
But they, for, and that, I said that on Washington radio, and they said they want it to be the Adam Peters show, which I'm fine with if that's, if that's what you want to go with, but just state your intentions clearly on that. I think everybody thought that the Commanders franchise was going to magically change overnight when Dan Snyder left the building.
Right.
And it takes a while. It's not, I think there's three types of owners. And frankly, I think you guys in SF know this well. There's three types of owners. There's owners who want to win and know how to win. So that's the Rooneys, in most cases, the Maras. Do believe Jed York is in that category. There's owners who don't care, don't just, will take the revenue check. They'll accidentally win 11 games every 3 years, but they really couldn't care less if they win or lose. They know everything evens out in the NFL. And then there's a third group. And the third group is the team that wants to, the owner that wants to win and doesn't know how. I'd say David Tepper is in that category.
Okay.
Because if he didn't care, he wouldn't fire everybody every year. Like he really, he doesn't know how. He doesn't know what winning football looks like. And I put Josh Harris right now in the category of someone who doesn't know how to win. And I think they'll figure it out. I think they're going to spend to figure it out, and they're going to give the resources to figure it out. I know there was some skepticism in the hiring cycle, but we don't know what this is going to look like. Is Josh Harris going to be, no one knows if they're going to be David Tepper until they go 2-13 or 2-15 2 years in a row. And then they start firing everybody, or it's patience or whatever. We talked about the Thomas Mitchell thing. There's no patience in this league at any level, whether that's coach, ownership, quarterback, whatever. And so we don't know. I always joke, like, I don't think there's such a thing as a quarterback prospect, because it's just the college game and the pro game is just so different that you're really just kind of educated guessing, right? Ownership's the same way. Until you're thrown into the fire, everybody says, oh, Josh Harris is going to be so great. Why? Because he's not Dan Snyder? And so I don't know. I mean, think about how many mistakes Jed York had to make before he became a really good owner. And he'll talk about that. He has talked about that. There's a trial by fire situation. And so I have no, I think Washington is the hardest thing to peg. I think with Caleb Williams, what's funny to me is everybody says, oh, well, the Bears waste every quarterback thing. They won't develop him. Well, good. That's why you draft a Caleb Williams, because you draft a player who's so good that he erases all your mistakes. He's your deodorant. I don't think Jaden Daniels is that kind of prospect, and I don't know what kind of scenario Washington is. I mean, that's just me pleading ignorance, because we don't know until the fire starts for everybody, owner, GM, coach, quarterback.
Well, I don't know that anyone really other than Caleb Williams is that kind of prospect. And I don't even just mean this year. I just think generally most of the time you don't know on both ends. You could look at Brock Purdy and the 49ers saw something in him, but most people did not think that the final pick in the draft was going to end up being the franchise quarterback and going to the NFC Championship game and then the Super Bowl in his first full season. So, you know, there's, you could go with that on a number of things. And that's actually what's going to be interesting to see in Washington and San Francisco this year, is that Adam Peters, not necessarily Brock, but he found a lot of those late round guys, a lot of those Kittles, the Neomero Lenores, the Fred Warners. Those guys are very like Adam Peters special. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how that plays out for Washington. And then for San Francisco this year, are they able to find those kind of guys? Again, they don't need a lot, but can they still find some of those gems? Because in the next year or so, they're going to have to start making some pretty tough decisions on contracts, and they're hoping they can find young guys to make up for those. So there's my deep thought of the day. there's your deep thought. All right, let's move to wide receivers. This is a very deep wide receiver class. And obviously Marvin Harrison Jr., and I think we all know how difficult it is for me to say that, is talent-wise the best one in the draft. Doesn't necessarily mean he's the best for everybody's team, but he is the best wide receiver in the draft. If you're not going with Marvin Harrison Jr., or he's gone now, he's been picked by Jim Harbaugh, who had to follow a pill like I did. Who was your favorite receiver in the draft?
Rome Odunze by a wide margin. Yeah. And I think it's closer to Marvin Harrison than we even think. Mm-hmm. 6'3", 212, never took a playoff, never took a game off, always present on an awesome Washington team, ran a 4.4 40. Measurables on explosion were off the charts. I don't know where the flaw is. I don't know where I'm supposed to look and say, oh, I have concerns here. Lance Dierling from NFL.com, I was looking for the scouting report a couple days ago. His comp was Larry Fitzgerald. Okay. That's kind of all you need to know. He's a smart guy. Everybody loves him. And I was looking at the weaknesses on the scouting report, and it was all just so small. It was, I'm looking at it right now, rushes through early stages of his double moves. Like, okay. And it's like up, a little too upright on the top of his routes on comebacks.
He cares too much. Like, is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, no, but it's too like, much. Okay, room for greater effort as a run blocker. So the Niners are out, but like, and the Rams are out. But like, I'm sorry, like, those are pretty minor things, because you read some of these scouting reports and it's like, can't use his hands, doesn't, you know, dropped 11 balls against Ball State. And it's like, no, this guy is a really good prospect. And you saw that over and over again. He was always consistently catching the ball. I mean, it was almost like Michael Penix were playing basketball on these 30-yard plays, just pitch and catch. And so I love him as a prospect. I have not, at some point, I'm gonna interview him pretty soon, be my guess. But I don't know the guy, but all the reports are glowing. Leadership good, captaincy. And so I don't know where the red flag is. I mean, it's like the old Daniel Jeremiah line about Marcus Mariota. His red flag is that he has no red flags. Right. Maybe who the hell knows what's going on with him, but he seems perfect.
That's really funny. He stands out to me aside from his tremendous talent in Houston. When Michigan won the national championship, I was there and I was sitting behind the end zone. And so I had a really good view of him. And when the game ended, he sat on the field and he sat there a while.
Yeah. Like
a sad while. But that does, I think, show the love of the game. And I think that there's something to be said for that. Not saying that the guys that didn't sit on the field, I'm just saying that there's something to be said for that. He was just so kind of devastated and just wasn't ready to leave the field. And I kind of loved that about him. I was happy he was devastated, and I don't mean that unkindly. I just, because obviously I was rooting for the other team, but there was something to be said for that. And he also is tremendous. And then I saw him play live that night, and he's tremendous. Right. He is a tremendous wide receiver. And even on the blocking thing, he's a big guy and he has the build for it. So it also could just be a matter of putting him in an offense where they're like, we're going to need you to block. You're like, okay.
He's so big that like, I don't think it's going to take much for him to become a decent run blocker. It's not hard at the receiver position.
So who are a couple guys, and it could be at a number of positions, and if you want me to say specific ones, that stand out to you that maybe aren't, you know, they're not the guys we're talking about every day. They're not the ones a casual fan knows, but maybe the early day three guys, the late day two guys that you think are real difference makers.
So I outside of day one, like day two and day three, I go off of athleticism. I'm just basically entirely trait based, which I think the best GMs are, where they'll just say, hey, this guy is, you know, jumps high and we'll just take him and he plays good enough linebacker or whatever it is. So for me, the guys I've circled, I don't know if he's going to go in the first or not. Ricky Pearsall from Florida, always open. Saved his coach's job a couple of times. Athleticism off the charts. He's one of these guys who's become such a gem, hidden gem, that now he's just shot up boards and everybody's talking about it. He's like first in everybody's hidden gem thing. And so I think there's part of that. Trevin Wallace from Kentucky is another guy. He's a linebacker. He jumped off the page because of his athleticism. And I just watched him and I just, love. I read a couple things about his instincts and about being bad, and I did not see any of that. He was always making plays in the SEC. Elifacio, who's an inside linebacker from Washington, speaking of the Huskies, incredible athlete. I watched him. He was all over the place. I think that when you pop on tape, I think that a lot of times, again, I'm just going all just off athleticism. A lot of these guys you'll see and it'll say, this guy, if you're measuring explosion, you just basically look at speed plus vertical jump plus broad jump, and then a couple other things, three cone being one of them. And a lot of times you'll watch the tape and you'll go, well, this guy's not doing anything with it. He's not exploding off the ball. He's not hitting a running back 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage. He's just not doing anything. And the guys say like Elefacio, Trevin, those guys are marrying the athleticism with the instincts and actually doing it. And so that's always what I do. A lot of GMs, I've asked them about their philosophy, and a lot of times what GMs say is that like day three for them is when you start to just take projects and you don't take any real, like there's a threshold of athleticism you have to have on day one.
Of course.
But they're also going to say, hey, this guy was a team captain, whatever. But on day three, that's when you just start saying, hey, this, and I don't think Ricky Purcell is going to be there on day three, just to be clear. But it's when you just start saying, hey, this guy's an athlete, we'll just bet on that. And, you know, I always go back to the great Mike Tomlin quote that he said on the Pivot Pod a couple of years ago, where he said that anything that's not pedigree is coaching, and that he loves when he loves competitively when he sees a coach run away from coaching, because he'll read something about hand placement and I'll say, well, we can't draft him because of hand placement. He'll go, well, no, that's coaching. You teach them hand placement. And so for me, I always bet on the athlete and then figure everything else out later. You think about how the Niners were built. It's huge guys who move quickly and are tough and are physical. And they come from places typically where they have an edge. I did that George Kittle piece a couple of years ago. And he was told when he went to Iowa that if you don't run block, you're not going to play here. And that's where he learned. And I don't even know if he loved it before that, but then he learned to love it. It's guys with an edge, and that you come to that through scouting and then understanding that big people beat up little people, the fast people beat up slow people, and you just go from there. And so that's just kind of how I view it.
A great day three guy for San Francisco, and obviously Fred Warner gets talked about a lot, and George Kittle gets talked about a lot. But a great day three guy, a sixth round pick, is Diamador Lenore, who is physical and feisty, and he's not the biggest guy, but he's fast, and he is turned into a really, really good corner and a really versatile corner. And I feel like he's one of those. He was kind of a day three gem that maybe wasn't at the top of people's gem boards, but he's done a tremendous job for them. And I think that he's one that doesn't get talked about enough in that kind of day three gem conversation.
So I will say this. I called Fred Warner in the draft process. I was like, Fred, we did an episode when we were at the Ringer called Draft Crushes. And I called Fred Warner and I said, this is the guy, purely off of his testing. Because he was just so athletic. I barely watched him. I just made sure he wasn't like running the wrong direction, you know, with the ball on the pitch. Just like, oh, wait, why is this guy running out of bounds for some reason? Why is he running backwards? But
so that's a skill, again, too.
That is a skill. But he can actually do that, but in a positive way. But that's kind of what I'm talking about, where if someone can move quickly in big spots on a football field, more times than not, you want them on your side. Remember, you're dealing with 8 or 9 guys per year. If you hit on 3 of them every single year, you might go to the Hall of Fame. So that's why I go with high ceiling guys, and Fred Warner being the best example, but there's a bunch of them all over the Niners. There are a bunch of guys who are second, third, fourth round picks in that team who are in all pro consideration every single year.
I'm really glad that you said that if you hit on 2 or 3 a year, you're going to the Hall of Fame, because I think sometimes fans, and I get it, they're fans and they really want their teams to be good, they get very upset about the draft, and they get very upset when like 7 of the 10 guys really don't pan out, or 6 of the 10, whatever it is. The draft, you're lucky if you get 2 or 3 that really work. It's a bit of a crapshoot, because you don't really know how people are going to handle the NFL. And there's so much that goes on with transitioning to the NFL that has nothing to do with being on the field. And that also can affect how a guy handles being in the NFL and how long his career is and how well he does. So I'm really glad you said that, because I feel like fans can be particularly tough in that category.
100%. And like, you think about like a good example is the Seattle Seahawks. where the 2011, they had a run of some of the best drafts of all time. 2011, they take Richard Sherman, they take KJ Wright, they take Byron Maxwell. Well, who do they take in the first round? James Carpenter from Alabama. Chris Durham was their fourth round pick. I mean, like, again, we don't remember that half, literally half in some cases, of some of the best drafts of all time were really quite mediocre.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. So I'm glad that you brought that up. So we're going to transition a little bit. We've seen the Houston Texans do a lot in this offseason. We saw D'Amico Ryans have really a heck of a season in his first year as a head coach. They get to the playoffs, they win a playoff game, and it feels very much like they are all in and really want to win right now. We talked about how Adam Peters has left the 49ers and gone to the Commanders. So I bring all this up to say that the coaching and GM tree in San Francisco is going throughout the league. There's Rand Carthon, there's Kwesi, there's Martin Mayhew, there's Adam Peters, there's all of that. So I'm looking ahead to I guess this would actually be the Super Bowl if we're going to go real early on this. I'm looking ahead to the Super Bowl. I kind of prepped you for this, but I've changed a little bit. So I hope that we're okay to go on the fly here, but it's the Super Bowl and you have the Kyle Shanahan versus Mike McDaniel. Who wins the offensive scheme battle?
So
we also could say regular season, they play each other in the regular season, but Super Bowl sounds more fun.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm actually not going to cop out. I was going to do a cop out thing and do both. Kyle Shanahan has a much bigger sample size of consistent offensive elevation than Mike McDaniel. It's a different question if I need one play to be drawn up to gain 12 yards for my life. I might take Mike McDaniel in that situation, but that ain't what we're talking about. We're talking about who over the course of the game right now has the title belt for the best offensive play caller in football. And there's just way too much ammo for it to be Kyle Shanahan. Like I saw a stat and unfortunately it's gone out of my brain because I'm not thinking about the regular season anymore, but something like they're like, I'm generalizing here. There's like eight quarterbacks in history who have had like 7 yards per attempt and three of them are Kyle Shanahan Niners quarterbacks. Like this is not normal. This is not normal what he's able to do with anybody. And I certainly don't want to get into the Brock Purdy discourse, but like it has a lot to do with it. And like, I think that there's a lot of quarterbacks, and I've always said this, and I say the same thing with Mike McDaniel too, but when I would love to know, I'd love to get truth serum in Kyle Shanahan or Mike McDaniel when it comes extension time. What I would do if I was John Lynch, if I was Chris Greer in Miami, I'd lock the door, get rid of all the recording devices and say, how many guys can you do this with? Because I think the answer is a lot. And if the answer is a lot and like, give me the worst player you could do this with, then you don't give a guy $65 million a year. And I think it's really hard for me to divorce the play caller from the player in a lot of these cases, in any of these Shanahan guys. I mean, the system is really freaking good and it makes a lot of guys look better. And I don't envy the spending decisions, but I also know that if you have that coach, it doesn't matter. Right. Cause everybody always says, well, what would Brock Purdy be without Kyle Shanahan? Where would he rank? I don't know. I do know what he ranks with Kyle Shanahan and it's like eighth in the league because he has Kyle Shanahan and we don't need to find out. Like, we don't need to, like, what is Patrick Mahomes with Andy Reid? I don't know. Like what would have happened if Patrick Mahomes got drafted by the Jets and Adam Gase? He'd have been a lot worse. That's some shocking revelation. Anyway, this is all an aside. I can't give it to anybody else but Kyle Shanahan right now because every single year, he puts out an offense. Every single game, he puts out an offense better than what it looks like on paper. And that's the mark of a true play calling savant.
So now I'm going to give a different Super Bowl scenario, which the sample size, again, is super small. And these are like questions that who knows and who cares, but it's just kind of fun to do. Well, I care because I'm asking, but it's just kind of fun to do. But now we have the San Francisco 49ers versus the Houston Texans. The Texans have done the 49ers a solid and beat Patrick Mahomes in the AFC Championship game. So now you have the 49ers against the Houston Texans. Who wins in that one? The storyline, by the way,
the San Francisco 49ers too. Okay. I love this Texans team. I love their timeline accelerating. I love that they're not waiting around. So many of these guys, these GMs and coaches, draft a quarterback and they say, well, we're going to be patient. Let's see what we have. And like, you look at someone like Justin Fields as an example. we're never going to see Justin Fields with the supporting cast that Caleb Williams has. And that's unfair. Geography is destiny when it comes to quarterback play. I just talked about Brock Purdy, right? But with Houston, they said, oh, we have CJ Stroud. We're also going to get our defensive CJ Stroud and Will Anderson. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a culture changer immediately. We're going to have, I mean, they had some pretty bad linebackers. They've already upgraded on that, but that was really the only hole when you saw the roster. They needed to upgrade a bunch of different places, but they had playoff caliber position units in a bunch of different places because they played the draft smartly and they had an infrastructure and the wide receivers were good enough for CJ Stroud. I remember the bang. I don't know if you read this, I did a Burrow thing a couple of years ago and the Bengals mm-hmm. coaches were talking about how good D'Amico Ryans was. Mm-hmm. And how teams basically changed their entire identity to play Burrow. And they mentioned D'Amico and they said that he basically in that Niners Bengals game a few years ago, he basically came up with the Tampa 2 concept they'd never seen on tape before on the fly. And they were just mm-hmm. like, holy crap, D'Amico Ryans is him. And they told me that before D'Amico Ryans' first season. And I was like, oh, pencil that, you know, file that away because it sounds like mm-hmm. he might be a genius. All of a sudden, it looks like, yeah, he is a genius. Mm-hmm. But the Niners have better players 1 through 46 active on game day. Mm-hmm. At some point, and I always think about this stuff, people forget it. Everybody's a choker until they're not. Like every single person, remember Roger Clemens when we were growing up was the choker. Peyton Manning was the guy who couldn't mm-hmm. win the big one. And then they won and people just stopped talking about it. I go, okay, never mind. I mean, this just happens. I remember during the NCAA tournament, Gary Parrish from CBS was like, no one remembers that before Billy Donovan won 2 championships in a row, he was the guy that went out in the first round all the time and couldn't beat Gonzaga. He was the guy that always lost to the random mid-major. And then guess what happened? He won 2 national championships in a row. You learn. You learn through people's careers evolve. Not everybody's Patrick Mahomes. And so at some point, the Niners will break through. At some point, the only externality is if a team in the NFC somehow, and I don't know who this would be, becomes the Chiefs of the NFC, and all of a sudden their spots in the Super Bowl get taken. I don't see that kind of competition right now. Don't think it's going to be the Eagles. Don't think with this quarterback it's going to be the Lions. The only thing I can think of is the potential that Jordan Love takes one more huge step, and all of a sudden it's the Packers. But I need to see a proof of concept before I think that the Niners aren't going to win a Super Bowl in the next 5 years.
And Andy Reid is another really good example of that. Yeah. Kyle Shanahan was actually asked, it was 2 days after the Super Bowl, we were doing our closeout with them, and he was asked about this. And he said, he said, we keep getting there. Like, that's not easy to do. But he said, the only way to change that narrative is to win a damn Super Bowl. And mm-hmm. that's correct. And they will win a damn Super Bowl. And I think people do forget also how hard it is to get there. And at the end of the day, there's 2 left and there has to be a winner and there has to be a loser. But it's hard to get there. It's hard to be the final 4. And I think at that point you are against the best of the best. And little things make a difference, especially like in this Super Bowl. Little things make a difference, especially against Mahomes. But they will definitely get there. I have no doubt about it. And it might be next year. And if they play the Texans, I feel like you and I are going to look like we're pretty clairvoyant.
I'm not picking against the Chiefs to make the AFC for a long time, but if the Texans do, you can clip this and then clip this part out of it and just have us discussing the Texans.
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
We'll use AI. AI will be flying by then.
We will clip and we'll just talk about how we talked about it and we'll clip in all the things that Kyle Shanahan won his Super Bowl. Like mm-hmm. we're going to really make this seem like we are psychic as can be. And I'm into it. Kevin, we're cooking. That is us. Let us cook. Let Tracy and Kev cook. Thank you so much for joining me. This was really fun. All I dreamed it would be and more. Can you please let everyone know where to find you?
This is Football in Omaha Productions. I'm at By Kevin Clark on Twitter and put out a bunch of shows in the off season. And we'll be in Bristol doing draft stuff for ESPN in a couple weeks.
Super fun. You guys can find me on Twitter at TracyFGSN, on Instagram at Tracy Sandler. We are brought to you by FIVO. We are brought to you by Bet Online. If you like what you heard, and I know you did, please make sure to give us a 5-star rating and a super positive review. And those are all my announcements for today. I will talk to everybody next time. Bye, all.